Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. It is so good to be with you again this afternoon. And, you know, we're getting excited, Stephanie, my producer, and I, because the show is approaching our 2-month birthday. And we have learned a lot. We have enjoyed getting to know our listeners and are finding our footing and how we can be a guide on the side for you as you face life's toughest issues with your kids. And we've had a lot of laughter, a lot of crying. If you've been listening, we've had laughter, we've had tears, we've had joy, and we have had breakthroughs. And that has been really exciting. And today is going to be no different. So we have one of my favorite guests. I guess I have to say my favorite guest. I just need to say that so far, because we have back on the program today, none other than, I feel like we should cue the White Christmas music, but my sister, Amber Brown, who is also a pediatric nurse practitioner. How fun is that? I know. We both have the same profession, which is super fun. And if you missed the first episode that Amber was on, go back and check out the podcast archives, and you can find her episode from November 15th if you're looking for it. That's a quick, easy way to look for the date, and you will hear her tell her amazing story of redemption, of finding hope, of hitting rock bottom, and then just finding hope after that. And that is a story that we all need. And when we were talking, I thought, oh my goodness, we have so much more to talk about. And I thought it would be helpful for you to listen in on our conversation. These are kinds of conversations that we honestly have all the time, where we're talking about what is facing our kids. And we both do have a unique perspective because we are both moms, which is common to so many of us here, but we're both pediatric nurse practitioners. We're both seeing kids every day. We're both educating new generations of nurses and seeing the challenges that they're facing with fresh eyes. And we are also believers. We are Christ followers. And so our faith is so integral to everything that we do. And before we get started on our conversation, I'm going to tell you a funny little story about Amber and I. And you can, again, listen to the story of the relationship struggles that we had and how we've overcome those. And when I was starting to write my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues, my siblings were such an amazing support system for me. And we really looked at some of the things that we had experienced as children and how they impacted us. And then I looked at how can I use Dr. Nurse Mama, my professor brain, my hands-on nursing experience, and my heart as a mom to be a guide on the side for all of you who are out here listening. And when I first started writing the book, I was really scared to tell my personal story and to kind of share some of the hardships that I had encountered, especially growing up and in my childhood. It was much easier and more comfortable for me to sit behind that professor persona and to be the teacher and, oh, here is all of the academic knowledge. But it was my sister, Amber, who really pushed me to say, no, you can't be unrelatable and unapproachable. You have to share your story. And so I kind of thought about it for a little while, and she actually wrote a little paragraph for me. And she said, here, this is what you need to say. I know your story just as well as you do by now. And so I read it. It made me very uncomfortable. And I was like, oh, we'll just put that in the back of chapter 6, like just tuck that in there. And my editor, when they read that version, she read the whole entire book, all like 55,000 words. And she circled about the 150 words that Amber wrote and said, hey, this is the book. This is the story. And so I thought, thank you. I'm glad that you really were overwhelmed with the 54,850 words that I wrote. But here is that she wrote. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to give away a copy of this book. So if you want to read that paragraph, that story that Amber wrote, we're going to give away this book to the first caller. And I'm still hoping for a caller from Texas. I love all of you who have called from all over the place. And we have several states, but nobody from Texas yet. Here is the number, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. And you can read more about the story that Amber helped me write. So all of that, Amber, welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. I am beyond excited to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Well, basically what we'll be doing today is just a repeat from yesterday. So Jessica was traveling yesterday and we ended up talking on the phone for about 2 hours. I don't know. Time went by so quickly, but what you guys are going to get today is just to listen in on two sisters talking and having the same kind of conversations that we usually have. And I think that's pretty exciting, pretty special.
I think it is too. And when we were talking, we're like, we need to share this. We just absolutely need to share this, because the conversation started actually, Amber, with you saying that you had been talking with a group of boys, with a group of friends of your son, and you were talking about some of the things that they were sharing. So why don't we start there?
Sure. So my son is 14 and he has some friends that are in the neighborhood. They had come over. And they all knocked on my door. They called me ma'am a bunch of times. And I knew they were wanting to ask me something. Oh, yes, ma'am. Yeah. Ma'am, hello. And I said, yes, I know you guys. What's going on? What do you guys want? And they wanted him to spend the night. And just as a practice in our family, we don't do a lot of sleepovers. And so I said, let me think about it. You guys go play some basketball or something. Come back later. So they came back later. They were prepared. They ma'amed me again. And I said, why don't y'all come inside? And because one of the boys I didn't know, I didn't know the other young man very, very well. I said, why don't y'all come inside? Caden can get some clothes if that's what we're going to do. And let's all just kind of chat. So they came in the kitchen and we just started talking. And then it went a little longer and I could tell that their legs were getting tired. So I said, hey, why don't you guys just come sit in the living room? And we ended up talking for about 2 hours with my son's 14. Like I said, he's got another 14-year-old friend and a 13-year-old boy, very sweet kids. But they started talking about some things that they were dealing with in their life. It was very surprising to me. Just some things that they had involved themselves in that they seemingly very innocent things, but that were really weighing on their heart. Like one of the young men was talking about how at a, you know, get together that him and his friends were having, he started playing with a Ouija board and he had felt something during that time that he was playing. And he was talking about how he still feels some kind of darkness or fear from that experience. And that just led to us continually talking about these things. And I asked him, I said, have you talked to your parents about this? And he said, well, I don't think anybody would believe me because it sounds unbelievable. And I could understand that because I don't think that we talk a lot, even in church, about spiritual warfare. I mean, you may hear a sermon or two, but I really think that these teens are hungry for the knowledge of how to deal with these dark things when they are approached with them, because inevitably they will be. So I was really grateful for the opportunity to get to sit with these boys, but it got me thinking how many kids are dealing with these types of issues and they don't have an outlet. They don't have anybody to talk to about it and they don't have any answers to get them what it is that they needed. So that's what prompted this conversation and that's what we're going to talk about today.
That's exactly what we're going to talk about today, and so many things that I want to slow walk here, Amber. So first of all, let's put a pin in that what he disclosed to you, and let's go back to the very beginning and just have a second to talk about sleepovers, because this is a question that I get a lot. I get a lot of emails and messages saying, do you allow sleepovers? And I'll share my insight, and then you can share yours, and we'll share that together. But I'm very careful about my always and nevers. I really try to really reserve those for the things that I will just die on that hill for, the things that I feel extremely, you know, like this is the line in the sand. And for me, sleepovers is not one of those things. That's not something I'm going to die on the hill for, but it is something that was very, very rare in my house. Very, very rare. Because, you know, Amber, you worked specifically in a child abuse clinic. So all of those, you know, bad stories fill your head and things can happen like that. But it is our job to protect our kids. But here's what I would tell my kids. I would tell them there is really nothing good that happens after 10 o'clock at night that you're going to miss out on. I mean, and if, you know, you're just going to sleep, then why do you have to be there? Like, why wouldn't you just come home and be in your bed? Because we all know that the preteen, teenage age, they're not going to get up early in the morning and enjoy, you know, coffee and toast together and have a nice conversation. No, you're going to roll up to pick them up and they're going to have bedhead and not have brushed their teeth and barely have said goodbye to the host. And so we just made that pretty much a standing rule, but we would entertain that we generally had a rule of no sleepovers, but we would entertain requests for exceptions. And there were some circumstances that we would talk through, but it always had to be, I mean, it was almost always cousins, you know, but somebody that we knew really, really well, somebody that we had been in their home. I was never going to let my kids spend the night somewhere where I hadn't been in that home. And that's kind of how we approached that. Do you have any other wisdom to add there, Amber?
Sure. We usually do not do sleepovers either. Like you said, I was a child abuse nurse practitioner for a long time. And a lot of the stories that I'd heard, a lot of the patients that had come to me, there were things that were happening at other people's house that I can't even imagine. And so just as a rule, especially if I don't know them very, very well, the answer is just no. And I've always been very open with my son about stories that have happened, things that I've experienced, things that I've heard, you know, experience, and he respects that for the most part. When he came to the door, and yes, they were mamming me, and yes, they were, you know, they being very, very polite, but I did, you know, manage to kind of get him on his way to go and grab some things, and he said, Mom, I respect your decision, whatever you decide to do, you know, because I think he knew that generally it's just, you know, if I don't know your parents very well, even if we do, there are things that happen at other people's house that are just not within our control. Now, when I was young, I did sleepovers all the time, but the world was different then. You know, there wasn't the internet at our fingertips, mm-hmm. and there wasn't, you know, a lot of the temptations that we have now. I mean, when Jessica and you and I were young, we just, and had sleepovers, we would just make up, you know, dances to Amy Grant songs. And, you
know, that is actually a true story.
That actually really happened. Yeah, we would stay up late
with streamers.
And do all kinds of things, but, oh, yes, for sure, for sure. But unfortunately, you know, in the world that we live in, there's just a lot more available these kids. And so just generally it's kind of a no, but like I said, I did allow him in this situation because I did know the child very well and I knew the parents. So we did allow it in this situation. So I do agree that you should, if you're going to make something an absolute never, then you're going to have to stand on that. I've told my son this, it's usually going to be a no. So that way when he gets a yes, it is a pleasant, wonderful surprise.
Isn't it great to surprise them like that? You know, I think about when my oldest, when she was in middle school, she really, really, really wanted to have a sleepover for her birthday party. And so we, you know, had a lot of conversation about this. And honestly, Amber, I was really surprised at like a couple of the girls I didn't know that well, but some parents were just very quick to say like, oh yeah, they can come. Like, oh yeah, what's your name again? You know, that kind of thing. But what happened was one of the girls who was over came and found me about midnight and she said, can I have a Sharpie? And I said, what do you need a Sharpie for? And she said, because I'm going to draw a mustache on your daughter's face. I said, no, that's not going to happen. That's not a good idea. But she ended up doing it anyway. I mean, this is how kids think. They don't think. And I'm grateful that social media wasn't around. But one of the rules that we had after that, even not even talking about sleepovers was, and I've shared this before, was I required all kids who came into my house to check into their phone to a central location. That was to protect my kids, and it was protect them too, because you've got so many different levels of access. You know, you've got kids who can be on their phone anytime, any way, and they're on every social media platform, and you have kids that don't even have a phone. So when they come over, it creates this social inequity where you've got, you know, some kids, it can be alluring to think like, oh, I haven't experienced that. Like, maybe I want to experience that, you know, just what is it like to FaceTime a boy at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, or that kind of thing. So I would just make them check them in. And they looked at me, Amber, like I had two heads, the friends. Now the girl, you know, my girls, they accept my yes and my no. And they're like, yeah, I may not love it. It may be a little embarrassing, but I trust my mom. Well, we have so much more to talk about. We're going to go back to what Amber was talking about the kids disclosing something and how scary that can be. So don't go away because we'll talk about how to talk to your kids about uncomfortable things. But in the meantime, I want to say hooray! Because Connie from Texas has won a copy of my book, Behind Closed Doors. So congratulations. Love all of you winners equally, but thanks, Connie, for putting Texas on the map. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends. We have a banner day today here on the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. Not only did we have a winner from my home state of Texas, congratulations, Connie, on winning that book, we are talking to my favorite guest so far, which is my sister. I guess if my husband ever comes on, he'll have to usurp you, Amber. But we were I know, but you'll be bumped for him, right? You'd understand. But my sister,
the greatest, really.
I know, isn't he? He's been around in your, like, mm-hmm. the majority of your life, which is so crazy that we're that old. Mm-hmm. But my sister is also a pediatric nurse practitioner. I know that's so fun. I still can't get over saying it. I'll never get over it for the rest of my life. And we're just letting you, as our listeners, just eavesdrop today on our conversation that we have about our kids and what perspective we use when we're talking as moms, as healthcare professionals, and as believers, when we're talking about the things that our kids are facing and what we need to do. Now, before the break, we were talking with Amber, who was talking with a group of her son's friends who disclosed that they were doing some things that weren't making them feel so great, that weren't sitting right. And we had a talk about sleepovers. If you missed it, go back and listen to it. But Amber, I want to pick up the conversation because we're kind of slow walking that experience that you had. And I wanted to share with you that I had the same experience. So not too long ago, I went to my kid's school, like where my kids go to school. I was asked to speak to a group of eighth graders in their technology class, and they wanted me to come and speak about social media safety. So I did, of course, and was talking to them about, you know, some of the dangers and pitfalls of social media. But we know as healthcare professionals that fear-based tactics don't work because kids are developmentally wired to think that can never happen to me. Like that's their personal fable that, yeah, I recognize danger happens in the world, but it would not happen to me. And we look at that and think, how could you think that? But that is how they're developmentally wired and how their brain is wired to think. So I'm talking to these eighth graders, and of course, we're talking about TikTok and Snapchat and social media messaging. But something that parents often forget is gaming, video games, because there are so many live elements where you can speak verbally, you know, with people, strangers all over the world, or you can chat. So I asked this group of boys, I say, how many of you have been contacted by a stranger, either through voice message or typed message, who said something that made you uncomfortable? And almost every single boy in that room raised his hand. And then I asked this follow-up question. I said, okay, how many of you have told your parents about it? And I will tell you that not one single kid had done that. Now, why don't they do that? Because they say, oh, if I tell you about this danger I'm experiencing, you'll take away my access. And I can't imagine my life without connecting with my friends through video games. And that can be really, really hard. And so I think, Amber, one of the important points here is that kids really do want an adult to talk to. And sometimes I think it's easier to talk to other adults than your parents because you really do care so much about what your parents think. And kids may not disclose something because they're afraid. Like the boy you were talking to, if he told his parents, I looked at a Ouija board, then they'd say, you can't go to their house anymore. And then he's thinking, mm-hmm. but then who am I going to sit with at school? Because that's my school lunch group. And then I'm going to get kicked out of that. So how do you, and you talked to them for 2 hours. How do you talk mm-hmm. to 14-year-old boys for 2 hours, Amber? What did you say?
Well, I asked them about their spiritual beliefs and I asked them about their experiences. So I just wanted to open the door and I was very quiet because honestly, one big thing I have learned in parenting is sometimes I just have to be quiet. We want to make everything into a lesson, right? Everything we have to teach them, and I agree there are times where that is appropriate, but there are a lot more times that are appropriate to just be still and just to listen. And a lot of that conversation, a lot of those 2 hours, they talk amongst each other. Oh, I've had that experience or I've felt that before.
And then as the conversation just developed, I asked them about their beliefs, you know, what is their belief in God? Do they believe in God? And then we just talked about, and I walked them through how, if you feel that there is some kind of darkness there, that there's spiritual warfare that may be going on there, and there are prayers that you can pray, and you can just talk to God about it, because the name of Jesus is so powerful. And I think we wildly underestimate that. I mean, the Bible says that demons will tremble at his name. And it's something that simple. And there are prayers I've prayed over my children and prayers I've prayed in my household to get rid of any dark forces, because the world we live in is dark right now. It just is. And it's scary, and parents are scared. And when I sit and think about it, there's very little that I can do to protect my kids all the time. I'm not with them when they're at school. I'm not with them when they're at, you know, basketball or gymnastics, or I can't be there all the time, but God can. And so I've started to pray over my children so hard for God's protection and God's provision. And that's given me and taken some of that fear, because God doesn't want us to parent from fear, right? When mm-hmm. we parent from fear, we make choices based on fear. And I think we all know that making choices based on fear, they're not going to be the greatest choices. But my kids, yes, they belong to me, but ultimately they belong to God, and God is going to watch over my kids. But I wanted him to give me the words to say. So we just walked through these boys, you know, I walked these boys just through, don't be afraid, you know, that the name of Jesus is really powerful. And they were, one of the kids was teary eyed, to be quite honest. Like he looked like he was relieved. I guess he thought that I'm just stuck with whatever this is that I feel, this darkness, this heaviness, I'm just stuck with it forever and I can't tell anybody. And it was a really, really beautiful thing. And I know that sounds so cheesy. It was an amazing experience. And I hope that it made some kind of difference in their lives, and that they can take some power and control under the name of Jesus over things in their life that they are really dealing with, struggling with, and that are heavy for them.
I agree. And you know, looking back to our Pray Streamers with Amy Grant, right? I mean, kids are facing such different things that we never had to face. And, you know, that's not to say that we didn't face hard things, because we absolutely did. Obviously, you know, we've talked about that a lot. But the speed and the intensity with which threats are coming at our children. I mean, I think about the scripture that says that Satan comes to steal, to kill, and destroy. And it feels like, I mean, that's always been true, but it just feels like somehow it's on steroids, you know? And we're constantly looking at these new threats that are coming to our kids and things that we've never heard of. I mean, that's part of what I do on my Instagram, is talk about, you know, things like looks maxing or deep fakes or, you know, all of these new words. And while Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, I do feel like there are new ways to present old threats, and they capitalize on kids' access and the speed of which they can make those decisions, especially because so many of these things revolve around the smartphone. And I also think that, you know, parents, their tendency, our protective instinct says, batten down the hatches, close the gates, pull up the drawbridge, like, you know, let's just really circle the wagons. And that is, I wonder, like, what our kids see when they see us. You said it earlier, just a minute ago, we make our choices based on fear. And when we let fear drive our actions and drive our parenting to, you know, batten down, I feel like that's not what we want our kids to see, but it is just our protective instinct to do that. And so what I'll talk to a lot of parents who just say, I don't want my kids to know about these things. I don't want them to hear about these dark things in the world. And I would say to that, amen, I don't either. But you know, I think about the time when my oldest daughter was like 5 or 6, she had just learned to read. So we were at the grocery store, and I mean, just the neighborhood grocery store, but she's voraciously reading everything because she can. And she read a very disturbing, horrible headline on one of the tabloid magazines that was, you know, closer to the bottom where she could see it. And she was asking me questions about it. And that really left me with the impression that, yes, we have to protect our kids as much as we possibly can. But just what you said, we absolutely cannot protect them from everything, and we need to equip them to be confident and bold and to know who to run to and when to run and when to come to us when they are encountering those kinds of threats. And so I say we must expose them in a developmentally appropriate way, in a way that positions us as the expert, and in a way that's not traumatizing. So I've given another example about, you know, talking to my daughter when she was in elementary school about pornography. And people would say, oh my gosh, now I did not tell her like, oh, the nitty gritty, awful details. I said, now there are a lot of people around you who have screens and they may watch things that we don't consider as appropriate. And you may see something that confuses you, that you don't know what it is, that you've never seen before. And if that ever happens, that something makes you feel ashamed and you don't know why, or confused, or like you've done something wrong, or even makes your body respond in weird ways, I want you to know that you can come and talk to me about that and we'll walk through that. So what is your advice to bring up these topics, Amber, without being traumatizing?
Oh, sure. So I think a lot of it really has to come organically because I don't, well, you have teenage boys. I can't imagine a world where I would call my son and say, hey, come sit down so we can talk about Ouija boards and witchcraft. You know, it's not going
No.
It's not going to be very...
Zero stars.
Receptive. Yes. He's not going to be very receptive to that. But if we're watching a movie together and, you know, something comes up on there, I may ask like, oh my gosh, what did you think of that? You know, and a conversation just can kind of spark up organically, and you should be able to read your child and you know your child developmentally, where they are mentally, emotionally, where they are and what your child can and cannot handle. And I'm telling you, I will say it again. I know I've already said it today, but the quieter you are sometimes, the more things will happen because your children will be able to express their questions and then you can see where their mind is ticking, right? How much do they want to know about this? How much do they not want to know about it? And teens don't like being lectured. I'll tell you that. They don't want to hear a lecture from you about, you know, the dangers of hip hop music or something. You know, they don't want to hear that. But most of the time when my son and I are talking about things, it comes up organically. You know, we'll hear a song with some crazy lyrics or something. And I'm like, oh, well, let me turn that off. And I was like, why? Well, did you hear what he said? Yeah. Do you know what that means?
Yeah. No.
Well, that's really inappropriate. Yeah. And most of the time, honestly, they'll say yes. But then when you ask, you know, what does it mean? And what they thought it meant was
not what it meant.
Not what it meant. So, you know, I think some of this does have to come up organically. But the other thing I was thinking of too is to be able to lead by example, because I am very open with my son about my struggles in the past with alcohol and with drinking. And he has seen the pain of addiction in our family, and he's seen the ways that addiction has torn our family apart, to be quite honest. We are rebuilding, of course, but he has seen that firsthand, and he's seen I do not drink at all anymore. And so I think because I was so open and honest, and he sees, and I told him too, like, these are the ways that it negatively impacted me. He doesn't want to do that, you know, and that's because he has seen it with his own eyes. But I've had to be humble enough, and it was embarrassing, to be honest, to have to tell my son, you know, I didn't go into great detail, but alcohol hurts you physically. It can hurt you emotionally. It hurts you mentally. It hurts your relationship. And I was very honest about that impact, and addiction runs in our family. And as we know from a professional side, it is generational. It runs in families, and it's just something I want to end and do not want my kids to struggle with. So I think it's an important part to note that you have to be honest with your kids, that you have to be able to let your kids see the impact that some of these decisions may make on their lives when they are approached with that. What do you think about that?
I couldn't agree more. And I'm so glad that you brought it up because, I mean, you're right. Our family does see addiction. And honestly, when we see how that starts, it starts back where we started this conversation, being exposed to something that is a door to darkness, honestly. And for somebody like somebody in our family who is genetically predisposed, who is relationally predisposed, you know, just because one of the things I talk about is that even one of the things I admire about you, Amber, is that you know, you don't drink anymore. You don't drink at all. That's a door that you have shut very firmly. But it's not enough just to do that. And you have modeled that because you can't just remove the offending substance. You can't just cut off that relationship or cut off that substance that you're using or whatever the unhealthy coping mechanism is. You have to invest in healthy relationship skills. You have to unlearn and relearn ways of doing things. And I think, you know, where this would apply to everybody who's listening in on our conversation is that we see things through a different lens than our kids see them through. And so sometimes I think that, you know, we may project some past trauma that we've had and think they're going to see a situation the same way that we do, but we don't. And I think that's where that communication comes in that's so very important. We talked about this yesterday that I had posted on my Instagram that I don't drink at all, but there is so much pressure. So this is usually how the conversation goes. If I go to a professional event, usually, or even a social event, this has happened to me at like a cheerleading banquet. I was not even off the driveway before there was a mimosa being put in my hand and I'll say, oh, thank you so much. I don't drink. Why? What's wrong? Like, are you pregnant? Like, that's usually what they'll ask. Or are you have religious objections? Or are you morally opposed? Oh, is it going to offend you if I drink? Like, and then, you know, there's this pressure that's like, well, you're not going to go to hell if you just have one drink. I cannot tell you how many times that people have said that to me. And I think, you know, the pressure, it's really hard. And how do kids face this? Like, how do kids say no to this and say, you know, when I'm feeling awkward as a 40 something year old woman, you know, that is such pressure. So when we come back, I want to finish that conversation talking about why social drinking is so ingrained in social life and how hard it is for teens to refuse and the importance of intervening early. Amber and I are also going to give you some great advice about giving your kid a code word to get them out of emergent situations. And most importantly, we're going to give you a prayer guide for how to pray over your kids, how we pray over ours. And we'll do that together. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to this special edition of Dr. Nurse Mama Show. If you've been listening in, you've been eavesdropping on a conversation that I actually had with my sister yesterday while I was driving, and we decided we needed to share this with you. Now, my sister is also a pediatric nurse practitioner, so we share a similar worldview and how we talk about things, and we were just talking about just some of the things that our kids are facing today. Now, Amber and I have a different perspective because we see so many kids all the time. And we see kids in the context of they share things with us. And we know the kinds of challenges that they're facing. And I think it's really, really important before we go any further to say that these kinds of challenges face families of faith. They face Christian families. And so one of the things I told Amber yesterday was about 7 years ago or so, I started speaking in nursing conferences about these kinds of issues. I started talking about social media and the health impacts and leading teams to see what do we really know about this. And so I would go in and talk and tell all about those things. But what I learned was that the nurses who were in the audience were not listening to me with their nurse hats on. They were listening to me with their parent hats on. And I cannot tell you literally the dozens and dozens of presentations that I've given and actually hundreds now, but not all on this topic. When I speak, inevitably, someone in the back of the room will stand up during the Q&A and they will say, with tears in their eyes, this happened to me. We were in church all the time. We did all the right things. We thought we had the right family. And this happened to me. Now, that's not to strike fear into your heart, but that is also to have a realistic look, to know that these things can happen. And that is something that Amber and I faced in our family, was our family really had a fear of falling off the glass pedestal that we were on. And we learned that we were more afraid of social injuries than we were of the very real physical injuries that were staring us in the face, threats of death and illness and very real physical health impacts. So before the break, we were talking about the pressures of kids to drink today. And I was sharing how when I share that I don't drink, I get so many questions. And I think this is hard because alcohol is so omnipresent in social functions. And anytime that you decline it, it just starts an inquisition and kind of skepticism as why are you really not drinking, and making you feel socially isolated. And it's so weird to me, Amber, because we don't do this when somebody asks for an hors d'oeuvre. Like if you offer an hors d'oeuvre and someone says no, they're like, oh, okay. Oh, that's good. Are you watching what you eat, you know, or oh, good for you, you know, but we don't do that for drinking. And I think that, you know, what are other, and you have shared very openly your struggles with alcohol in the past. So what other words of advice would you give to parents of teens who think, you know, I don't think my kid has ever experimented, or maybe they have experimented a little bit? How would you respond to that?
Sure. So one of the things that I had talked about with my son is, why don't I want you to drink? Yes, it's illegal, right? But just because something is legal doesn't make it moral, or it can be a gateway to something else. And in my life and my experience, alcohol is a gateway to other things, and it opens the door to things that wouldn't normally be able to come in. You know, I know I've shared this with you before, but I'll share it today that, you know, if you go to a fancy restaurant and you open up the alcohol menu, it doesn't say alcohol on it, it says spirit. Right. And I'd heard somebody say one time that alcohol opens the door to spirits, and that's why they call it spirits. You notice when people drink, they do things they wouldn't normally do, right? They act out of character. They say things that are inappropriate. It opens a door to things that can really harm you. And especially with teens who don't have a very developed brain, you know, that can be really scary. And we've seen a lot of things where people have videoed things that teens are doing while they're drinking. And those videos last forever. I talk to my son about this all the time. Even if you're putting it on Snapchat, right, which they think disappears and gives them this false sense of security that it disappears. The internet is forever, you know. And it's the drinking part. It's not just the drinking part. To me, it's these are the decisions that can be made while you're drinking. It lowers your inhibitions, you know. Alcohol is so harmful, and people don't really talk about it. And I don't have anything against people who drink. Please don't misunderstand me. There are some people who are able to enjoy alcohol responsibly. I just wasn't able to enjoy completely responsibly. And I just caution people to understand the ramifications of what alcohol does to your body. From a nurse practitioner perspective, it harms every organ that you've got. And when I was drinking a lot, that's when I got so sick, and I ended up in the hospital for almost a month with a lung infection. My immune system was down. I looked almost unrecognizable, really. I don't know if you remember what it looked like, but I was very puffy and I just looked bad. And my body was going through so much at that time. And so I don't want that for myself. I don't want that for my kids. So when I'm talking to my son, it's not just a don't drink, you know, because kids always want to do what you tell them not to do. It's, this is what happens when you do. And this is what it looked like for me. And I don't want that for you. And when you come at it as a place of, I care about you and I want all good things for you, they tend to soften a little.
And I think it takes a little,
that will never work. No. I'm sorry. What was that?
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, and I think it takes away some of the mystique too, because you're having this open conversation. It's not just, no, that's a locked door. You can't know what's behind that. It's okay. Well, let's talk about that. I think that's really good. But yes, you were saying lecturing doesn't work. I agree. I always say you can't lecture your way to leverage behavioral change. It just doesn't work.
But not talking about it doesn't work either. Right. Because in our household, we didn't discuss it. It wasn't discussed. You don't talk about that, because if you don't talk about it, you won't do it. And that's not a true statement either. So I felt ill-equipped to understand or know what the ramifications of that looked like. And I have never one time told my son, you cannot drink, because the first thing he's going to want to do is go and do the thing that we said not to do, right? I am presenting him with, this is my experience. This is the experience that our family has had. Now it's up to you to decide what you're going to do with that information. Did I give him permission to drink? No. But giving them the choice, which ultimately it is their choice anyway. And teens so much want control and independence. That's who they are. And that's what they're meant to do, because at the teenage stage, they're pulling away from us as parents, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way. They are starting the process of pulling away and starting to become their own persons so that they can become an adult and go and be on their own and make their own choices. And it's a painful time for parents and for kids. You know, we want to let them go, but also then pull them back and let them go and pull them back. And that really is what the whole teenage years look like, is the process of letting go. And then when that goes too far, you pull back a little and letting go and pulling back. But I think just giving your teens the information and then letting them mull over it, think about it. And this has been a conversation over years. This isn't something I sat him down one day and said, let's talk about alcohol use. It doesn't happen that way. It will always happen organically. That's the best kind of conversations that happen.
I agree. And the other side to that, in giving them information, is to tell them about the health risks, to tell them this is what can happen. I mean, I think those are all really important things to know, and especially even about drinking. You know, my girls had to do a college course on, you know, awareness of the dangers of alcohol, especially on college students, because we know that no alcohol is safe for a developing teen brain. We can have a different conversations about adults, but teen brains don't fully develop actually until they're about 25. So alcohol impacts teens way differently than it impacts adults. And, you know, just looking at some of the research, it increases the risk of falling, of car accidents, of getting burned, of alcohol poisoning, of experiencing violence, of heart disease, cancer, infections. I mean, so many things, like you've said. So the other piece of the information that you have to give them is the consequences of what will happen if they choose to engage in that activity. Because what I see is a lot of times kids are afraid to disclose because they really don't know what's going to happen. And in their mind, like, they think like wild, crazy things, you know, like my mom will literally kill me. Like, she will ground me in my room for forever. Like, I'll never have a social life. Like, I'll get sent off to a boarding school. They start to think these kinds of things. And so I think in having that conversation, it's important to tell them, if you choose to do this, here are what some of the consequences would look like for that. You wouldn't be able to drive. You know, you're going to have these privileges taken away. You know, that's going to be a conversation. And then knowing that, you know, makes it more contractual as well. And it just makes it more the natural consequence of their decision. And one of the things that we talked about yesterday, Amber, was the importance of giving kids an out, because they will make dumb decisions. I mean, they will get in over their head. They will go into a situation with the best intent. Like, they're not trying to sneak away to do something that violates your morals or your standards, but they may get themselves in a situation where they're thinking, okay, I need a ride home. I don't really feel safe here, but this person's drinking. Do I get in the car? Like, what do I do? And so what I have always done with my kids is have them have a code word. And that code word means you call and you say this one word and I will drop everything. I will come and I will pick you up with no questions asked. Because when kids call in the middle of that situation and say they're at a party, because this is what, you know, we see all the time as nurse practitioners especially, but say they're at a party and they had the best of intentions. They thought it was going to go one way, but, you know, surprise, surprise, now there's drinking there. So if they call and say, hey, can you come and pick me up? Parents will be like, why? What's wrong? What's going on? Oh, well, you know, I just want you to come and pick me up. Is something wrong? What's going on there? Is there drinking there? Yeah. Who's drinking? Jimmy. Well, who's Jimmy? Where's Jimmy's mom? And like, then you're trying to have this conversation, but what you don't realize is that they need an emergency ejection. Like, they need the hatch to come and their call, if they can call you, and they know that you're going to come and get them with no questions asked. Now, I get this question all the time, Amber, because I've heard some mental health professionals and some other parents say, like, I'll never ask you any questions. And I did not adhere to that. I told my kids, I won't ask you any questions until the next morning. Well, and that's good for me, because I can let my emotions kind of settle down, you know. And I will say, like, personally, have honestly, we've never had to use it. We have never had to use it, but just knowing that it's there has been super helpful. And well, I say that we've never had to use it, but you know what? Honestly, I can think of one time when we did have, when we did have that situation, and, but there, our relationship was, you know, so strong that we could do that. And I always let them use me as an out, you know, like just say, hey, my mom would totally freak out. Like, nope, she's going to come and get me. So what do you think about code words?
Sure. We have one, but I told him, you don't even have to call me, because he may be embarrassed to call in front of his mom, come get me, you know, or, you know, try to find a way to use a code word. So there's an emoji that we have, not telling you what it is because it's a code. But he can text me that, whatever that is. And I said, I will, I've got his location. You know, we do have an app where I can find him. And I will come and get him. And I adopted the same theory that you did, is I'm not never going to ask questions, but it, I did tell him it doesn't matter what kind of situation that you're in or what state you're in, I will come and get you. But what I do want to say, as we were talking, is if your children do make this choice, which, I mean, our children may make this choice, I don't know. You can tell kids things until you're blue in the face, and they may clearly understand the consequences and clearly understand, and they may choose to do it anyway. And that doesn't mean you're a failure as a parent or that your kid's a failure. It doesn't mean those things. It just means they made a bad choice, and they're going to have to experience the natural consequences. And I hate that for my kids. You know, I don't want them to experience consequences, but sometimes we have to allow that to happen when they do decide to make those types of choices. But I always tell my kids, I even tell this to my daughter, who's only 7, you can always throw mommy under the bus, okay? If somebody is doing something or asks you something and you don't think it's appropriate, or you don't want to do that thing, or you don't think it's right, you can say, oh no, my mom would never let me do that. I'm not doing that. My mom would be so mad at me. I don't care what the thing is. And if we've never discussed it, you can say it's mommy's fault. Okay. Because the thing is, kids get in these situations where they don't know how to get out of it. Right. And so they may not normally have made that choice, but because they feel stuck and they don't have a way out, they don't have brains that are developed enough to think of all the different things that they could do. It gives them a beautiful way to just know that they have an out and that their mom is a safe place, no matter what decisions that they make. And I'll be here for them, even through the natural consequences that happen. It's going to be tough, but I'll still stick by you. You know, and I think just kids knowing that they have that support is enough. But what I want to be clear on, last thing, is it is not giving my children an out to participate in anything they want to participate in, and I will just come and pick them up. So you do have to make that distinction. I'm not giving you permission to do things that we've already talked about are not allowed, but I am telling you that your mama will be there for you.
That makes me want to cry. And that's what I tell my kids. There's nothing we can't work through together. Now, what Amber and I spent the second hour talking about in our car conversation yesterday when I was driving to Waco is we talked about praying for our kids. And we cannot emphasize enough. Like, I pray out loud, like just on the spot. If my kid asks me to pray for them, I immediately send them a voice memo. If I'm not with them, I immediately put my hand on their shoulder if I'm there. And Amber has developed a prayer guide for parents, a prayer for protection, a prayer for discernment, and a prayer for understanding. And that will be on my social media at Dr. Nurse Mama right after we get off the air here. So go and pray for your kids. That's a topic we'll talk about next time. Thanks, Amber. We'll see you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.